From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Hello, friends, benders and non-benders alike. Welcome to Braving the Elements, Nickelodeon's podcast about all things Avatarverse. I'm Janet Varney.
And I'm Dante Bosco, and I can't believe we're already at the end of book two, Varney.
I know, buddy. I gotta say, time has flown. I mean, the second season of Avatar is so incredibly action-packed with so many cliffhangers. It does kind of feel like it's over before you know it, like almost before you're ready for it to be over, which I guess is... that's just a sign of a great show.
Absolutely. And then even just looking back on our own season two of the podcast, we've had so many amazing guests, both new ones and returning ones.
Yeah.
And I still feel like we have a million more things we want to cover outside the scope of just recaps.
Yeah.
So I'm already getting psyched for season three.
Yes, please. Okay. So for today's episode, before we get ahead of ourselves, we felt like we wanted to do honor to the fact that, you know, every episode of Avatar. Thank you. I'm glad we squeezed that in. I wish everyone could see Dante's face because he says it almost as an afterthought. Like, it's almost so Pavlovian at this point that someone says honor and he's like not even thinking about it. His voice just goes honor. And then he's like, what? Huh? What happened? I blacked out for a second.
I don't know what's going on. It'll be on my gravestone.
It's going to be on your gravestone. I can think of worse. That'd be very cool.
Yeah.
That'd be just fine.
Yeah, not bad.
No, but like, you know, how every episode that we recap, we talk about, you know, we're like, a lot happens in this episode. And once you add up all of those, a lot happens in this episode, you have a whole lot happens in this season. So we kind of feel like we need to maybe address that as far as how it sort of affects like big picture of Avatar: The Last Airbender, you know?
And we knew we had the perfect person to do that with. You met her last season when we also talked about some big philosophical and emotional themes of book one. And she's literally a professor who created an Avatar class syllabus.
Yeah, I would say even one of the early role models we had in wanting to become like professors of the Avatarverse ourselves.
Which we're on our way. We're not done with the whole course yet, but we're like...
But not at all. Not even close. We're going to have to go back and listen to our own podcast to remember everything that we've talked about with everyone. It's going to get so, so, so meta. But please, everyone, welcome back, Ijeoma Njaka. Ijeoma!
Hey,
welcome back!
Thanks, y'all. It's great to be here.
How are you? How have you been?
Yeah, I've been all right. Got some grading to do. Some projects are coming down the pike, but it's all good stuff. So... yeah, but doing well.
It's been a minute since we had you on. Will you remind people like where you teach? And also, if you remember, remind us what kind of bender you said you would be.
Oh, yeah. So I'm definitely, I'm going to start with the most important thing first. I'm definitely a firebender.
Yeah.
Definitely a firebender.
I thought that would make Dante happy.
Forever.
Yep, redirecting lightning is very important to
me. Let's go.
In my regular life. So yes, those are those facts. Otherwise, yeah. So I'm based at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. And I think the best way to describe what I do is I'm an arts educator that works at the intersection of arts and social justice. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I feel less worthy or more worthy than I did last time. I feel more worthy.
I feel worthy. I did not go to college. So whenever I talk to someone, especially who's teaching at a college, I'm like, hey,
what can you teach me?
We're all out here learning. Learning is an ongoing process.
That's right.
We do it every day. So yeah, this is exciting. So yes.
Listen, we knew we had the right person. I do feel like, Dante, maybe we should kind of catch up also just with respect to book two, like just sort of bring Ijeoma into this as far as like favorite stuff. Like, I know it's cruel, but...
I know it's cruel. So let's look at book two and let's talk about favorite episodes. Do you have a favorite episode in book two?
Ooh, this might feel like it's like a bit obvious, but yeah, my favorite two episodes are the last two, the finale, so The Guru and the Crossroads of Destiny.
Nice.
I don't know about you two, but I'm definitely somebody who like gets chills when I'm like really into something, and
yes.
like I feel like I get chills like every 5 minutes.
Wear a sweater, baby.
Yeah, exactly. It's wetter weather. Yeah. So I think for me, it's those last few episodes. I mean, in terms of a sort of pivotal moments and turning points, there's just a lot there that just gets me every time. But yeah, I think if I had to like pick like a favorite moment, well, there are several. A moment that I really like, and I was actually just watching this again last night, is when Toph discovers metal bending. It's like, you know, they like tell her like, oh, you think you're the greatest earthbender in the world, but even you can't bend metal. And she has her like Michael Jordan. And I took that personally moment. Yes. And then she's like, no, I am actually the greatest earthbender in the world.
Actually.
And you believe it. And there's like she's evidence in front of you. Yeah, exactly. You're like, oh, yep, you're right. And it's just that part's really powerful for me.
And to think that we just met her earlier in this book.
I know.
Right. Blind Bandit. That's nuts. I forget, because in my mind, I didn't realize that arc happened in book two.
Yeah.
Right, that she's been there for 2 weeks.
Yeah, like, it's so epic. You're like, is book two 4 books? What's happening?
Like, yeah. Because really this season, we're just meeting Azula really for the first time.
Yes. Yeah.
They allude to her last book, and then we really get to meet her. And then she does all this wild stuff with her friends. And then you also, we just meet Toph. And again, she does all mm-hmm. this wild, crazy stuff and this crazy growth within one book, which is wild. And Zuko's still stuttering out. She's struggling. Struggling through the book, Zuko.
We all have like different paths, you know?
Aang and Zuko are
longer
struggling
and
through
shorter.
This book.
Yeah, yeah, some get stretched out. Arcs take different shapes.
What are these
it's
guys doing? The girls are moving fast and the guys are struggling through the book.
You know what? That's an overgeneralization that I absolutely support in this case. Sokka too. Little
Sokka
bit of a
also,
slower.
Also Sokka.
That's so funny. I never thought about it that way. I love what you said to Ijoma, because I've said this before on the podcast, but like, I want to be the kind of person to where when someone says something that I specifically can't do, that I am that person, that I am Toph, that's like, oh, really? Because that is the hero we love to see in movies, in books, in TV shows. Like, when someone's the underdog and you see them get rejected at its face, and that exact precise thing is what mm-hmm. they then take to move forward. I'm kind of that person, sort of, but I would say for the most part, especially as a younger person.
I think you are,
like,
Barney.
I think you are too.
But that's very sweet of you to say. But I'm just saying, when I was Toph's age, if someone said that, I would have been like, you're right, I can't bend metal. You know what? I'm just going to be in my room, like, writing in my journal. I'm going to figure something else out that I can do. That, like, that would have been my approach to make myself feel better. Like, well, I can do other things. So I just love that. And if you two feel like you're closer to the person who's like, oh, I'm going to show you exactly what I can't do and can do, you know, I have such admiration for that.
I mean, I'm not that type of person, but which is why I admire it so much.
I love that. It's one of those things that I admire. I don't even know who said it, but they're like, the very thing that causes many people to fail is the exact same thing that caused another person to be the success that they are. Like, the one thing that people are like, this is the reason why I, whatever. And then that very reason is, and as horrible as that reason could be, is the very reason why someone else became as great as they become. And I'm like, that's a good lesson.
Yes. It's a great lesson. So that being a favorite moment for you completely resonates for both of us, too. That's a beautiful moment. What about characters? We talked about a couple of newbies just now with Dante, but do you have favorite characters? And they could be, you know, sort of like one-off that you see once and say goodbye to and wish you saw more of, or, you know, they could be the Azulas of the world, or both. Do you have characters that come up for you that you're like, yeah, love that person?
Yeah. I mean, Azula is just a really well-done character.
Yes.
She, you know, she's a sociopath. And I think she's a really well-drawn one.
Very completely drawn.
Yeah, exactly. So I appreciate the attention to detail there.
You know who I think about all the time?
Who do you think about all the time,
Barney? I think about that swamp monster, that gentle man under the swamp creature who talks about time and death being an illusion. I think about him all the time. Like, he's really
and mystical.
In me. Yeah. Very Iroh.
You know what I think about all the time, Barney? Jet came back in book two.
Yep.
Yeah.
Jet left forever, I think, in book two. But goes to a turning point, and then it's a sad story because he's like the complete anti-hero that some of us love out there. And it looks like he turned a leaf. But, you know, then his rage against the Fire Nation gets him again. And then he gets kidnapped by the Dai Li. And then he gets full-on brainwashed. And then he gets killed. It's like, come on, guy. Like, could have been a great story, and then it becomes a sad story almost.
Yeah, I was going to say, in my household, my husband is a big Jet fan, so so he had a lot of feelings with that episode as well. I like Jin, the girl that Zuko goes on a date with.
I also like Jin.
You know, I appreciate her,
whatever,
like, just assertiveness.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Every year on the anniversary, she goes and to those lanterns wishing they were lit, wondering where Zuko is.
She's just a local girl around Bossing Say, just hanging out, you know?
I know.
Zuko's like, I got to get back to Bossing Say someday. I got to spend a little time there.
Just to see what's up.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought her up, too, because I do feel like she's one of several young women along Zuko's path that... they leave an impression. They can't bring him through what he has to go through himself, but there's a little seed that they plant along the way, whether it's, you know, remember the girl in Zuko Alone who's like, I too went through this, was hurt by the Fire Nation. People who, like, they reach him in some way. He's not utterly unreachable.
Yeah. Sometimes people are in your life just the amount of time that they need to be there to tell you something. Plant that seed for the next part of your journey.
Yeah.
There are lots of things that I like about that particular, you know, sort of short story in the Tales of Bossing Say. I really like Zuko's middle part. That's really cool, too.
But it's so short-lived. That middle part down the center of his hair.
We don't like that middle part. Uncle's setting us up for failure with that one.
I mean, out of all the things that Uncle Ira knows, I'm just wondering why he did not know that.
Don't be going to fix my hair. You're lacking some hair there. Yeah. You haven't fixed your hair in quite some time, so you're not up to the latest fashion that's popping off out of it.
No, definitely not. It was not Uncle Ira's greatest move, but no, there is something in there about, like, Zuko, like you were saying, about, like, his, like, about what's getting reached inside of him in that moment, which is his, you know, his, like, sense of compassion or sort of care or, you know, service for other people. You know, I think it's nice to sort of see a moment of that happening before his, you know, transformation that he has after he has the fever, sort of a few episodes later, after he's freed Appa. It's interesting to, like, get a glimpse of that, sort of, like, doing a little bit of foreshadowing work there, which I think is really cool.
No, it's wonderful.
Now, what about Aang? The whole arc of him learning earthbending, this book is, I thought, was very, I mean, it's so insightful. I love how they go into the elements and what it takes to eat. They really to do certain elements.
I'm so glad you mentioned
that. And him
as
an airbender going into earthbending, and of course meeting Toph, who's kind of contrary to him through a lot of his earthbending learning. And he's not, and as our hero of our story, our protagonist, like, he's not taking to it very easily. It's almost like the diametric opposite of what he does naturally. Yeah. And so to see him struggle through that, it's really cool. Also, there's, like, all these lessons in those teachings and his struggle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it's really awesome to see, like, his growth. And I mean, I think that's something about what makes the show so important, is that the hero is not, like, fully formed, you know? We're, like, seeing them grow and develop and become somebody else. And I mean, I think this book does a great job of, in the, you know, episode where Iroh is teaching Zuko about, you know, redirecting lightning, for instance.
Is that Bitter Work? Is that the same one?
Yeah, Bitter Work,
So it's the same one as where the first time we really see Aang,
it's all
on purpose.
The Bitter Work.
Exactly, it's all Bitter Work. Yeah, you know, thinking about, like, Iroh talking about how we have to draw wisdom from multiple places. Yeah. Obviously, Zuko's, like, being sort of told that explicitly, but Aang's doing that on his own. And we can sort of see that that's not, through both Aang and Zuko, that that's not always easy to do, to learn something different or to learn something that, but once you sort of discover it, you're actually not going to be the same person on the other side of it once you learn
it.
Oh,
I love that.
Yeah, Toph, we can't just be challenged by the two bad guys and all of a sudden we just start bending metal. We're not those kind of benders, Toph.
I mean...
I mean, that's why the show's not about her. But one thing that I was thinking about in terms of, like, also, like, turning points, there's one moment in The Guru that I think is, like, a little subtle, but is actually another one of my favorite moments, is when Aang is, you know, opening up his chakras and he's, like, at the last one. And so he's, like, you know, accessing his, like, cosmic energy, and he sees his big sort of glowing self, and then his arrows start to glow on his body, and he looks at his arrows and he smiles.
Share me the details.
I love that moment because, you know, we see so much of Aang in the series. He doesn't look that happy when he's in the Avatar state, you know what I mean? It always sort of comes out of a sense of, like, strong emotion or anger or deep sadness. And so I love that he is glowing and he likes it and he thinks it's cool and continues to like walk towards it and step towards it. Obviously he like runs away from it 2 seconds later, but I think that moment, that feels like a turning point for me. Like, you know, he knows that it's possible to like really embrace his power and to be comfortable with it, which actually feels really critical.
Especially, yeah, I mean, thinking back on like when he's having nightmares, like the thing he's afraid of is himself in the Avatar state. Maybe not the only thing, but like, which is becomes Foreshadow Report. That's like kind of Korra stuff too, where it's like the thing inside you, it becomes the thing that you're most afraid of. It's a wonderful, wonderful moment, and it is subtle, and it does feel like it sort of starts to put away some of those like open-ended things, like having dreams about yourself doing terrible destruction or sort of seeing what you've done from the outside, like that kind of thing. It's a great moment. But it is crazy. Like, yeah, like going back to Aang for a second, like you don't know going in, if you're watching the show for the first time and the book is called Earth, you don't necessarily know, like, is this going to be a season about Aang learning how to earthbend? And it is and it isn't, right? I mean, it's there's so much happening in and of and kind of outside of that. In a way, there's times where I'm like, I feel like, oh, it's Earth because they're in the Earth Kingdom and, you know, it's Earth and we're meeting Toph. And yes, by the way, Aang is also learning how to earthbend, but it doesn't feel as front and center as like a conventional show might make it. Like, this is about a boy. The boy has to learn how to do these things. Right. The first season, he learns how to do this. The second season, he learns how to do this. It's like, no, episode 9 is when he sort of starts to show promise as an earthbender and do it at all. You know, it's really interesting.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And I think there's probably a level of analysis that somebody can do, but you know, about sort of like what other folks are kind of learning in these different places too, you know what I mean? Like, I think titles are sort of invoking something, but they're also in their own way like turning points for the various characters about sort of things that are like important to them, but like are adding on to their like knowledge and information that they're accumulating, which is why they, you know, have a growth arc by the end of the series. You know, one thing I was also thinking about in terms of turning points in this season, I was thinking about Iroh and Zuko, but in particular, just Iroh, just choosing to yell at Zuko a little bit a couple of times in the season.
Lake Laogai, he takes it to another level in Lake Laogai where it's jarring. I mean, it's really the turning point for Zuko to release the blue spirit, as cool as the blue spirit is, cool as that mask is, as cool as the vigilante life is.
It is really
that Batman life. He drops that, and because Uncle Iroh really, and shout out to Mako, and that performance, it really jars you. Like, oh my goodness, this is real. It feels really real. And then you see Zuko start to transition into where he's going to go, and it's not an instant transition as we see through the Earth King. He's sick through the whole episode because he kind of broke himself. That whole thing broke who he thought of who he is, and now he has to put himself back together to figure out who he's going to be, which is, it's a big turning point.
Yeah. That episode is so intense, and I mean, I don't think we talked about it in the episode itself, because if memory serves, we were with Gray, and she was having trouble not becoming Azula. There was like a lot of, she was sort of battling her own inner Azula, even as Zuko was battling his inner Zuko. So we didn't talk that much about Zuko kind of needing to like sweat it out, right? Have that fever. But I love how awful it is, actually, because we hear from Iroh that like, this is not pleasant. Like, we would all love to think that if we've been making a series of choices that maybe we shouldn't for a period of time, that we're going to make that right decision and boom, everything's going to turn around for us, because isn't that just, isn't that what we deserve if now we're starting to make the right decisions? And it's hard that things have to catch up with those choices, right? That's really hard. And it can cause you to slip back down, like we see maybe Zuko going through. But it, don't we all kind of have that where we're like, well, I thought I would feel better right away. I don't know if it's worth it then.
And it goes the idea of like real change takes conflict and pain to move, or some kind of like real change is not as easy as we would want it to be most of the time. And so that you kind of physically get to see that with Zuko. And I thought it was amazing that they put that in the piece, because it's like, wow, that's heavy. I mean, this is the Book of Earth, but that was heavy. Mike and Brian.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're talking about, right, change and growth, it's not always linear, and progress isn't linear. And so it is really interesting. It's exemplified with Zuko, you know, especially when those changes involve, kind of what you both were talking about, like just a huge reorganization of someone's like concept of who they are. Like they have to, yeah, like you were saying, Dante, like build up who their sense of who they are. They have to build that back up. Mm-hmm. There's an element of, you know, like healing that's happening there and recreating. I mean, yeah, it is bitter work. It's, yeah, really interesting just to be able to see that on the show. I also admit, I feel like Iroh yelling at Zuko also gives me like immigrant parent vibes.
Oh, totally. 100%.
Yeah, I was like, this reminds me.
It's definitely a button.
Yeah, like,
he starts yelling like, I'm feeling a button right now.
That's the ancestors. Like right there.
You're like, stop what you're doing right now. Yeah. Whatever you're doing, stop.
Yeah.
I love that, though. And I'm saying this, by the way, as a kid whose family has been in the same country for quite some time. But you know, I have a lot of friends, including Dante, who are first-generation American. And we do see that in stories in Avatar but as well a little bit, especially with Iroh, which is this idea of like something we can all relate to, which is, oh, I can't infuse in you everything I've gone through and everything my family has gone through to take you to this moment that feels very fleeting to you. It feels very like you're the center of your own universe because you're young. That's very natural. But if I could just yell at you enough to get all of that into your soul.
Can I just shake you awake?
Yeah, then you wouldn't have to go through all the pain because I could have just like given you an injection of passion and knowledge. Right. And it's like, no, I understand. Like you really understand as you get older why our elders get frustrated and want to be able to have a more lasting impact in the moment than they can because of the way maturing works, you know? Oh, it's kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I feel like Iroh too. It's like, you can like just tell he's just like lost his patience in a way, you know, in some of these moments, like again, sort of thinking about like right before Zuko frees Appa, he just sort of has this lead up before he starts yelling. He's just like, what are you going to do? You bring this bison to our apartment? You know, like he's like,
yeah.
kind of sarcastic in a way, which I'm also just, you know, he's not really like him.
Can we put him in the bathroom?
Right. Yeah.
Let's talk about Sokka for a second, and we'll get into some social media responses. People had such lovely responses. No surprise there. Deep thinkers all, the Avatarverse fandom. But Sokka, you know, here we see, we're not focusing on him, and he's maybe not going through something that comes up every episode, you know, the same ways we see Zuko going through stuff. But how about that experience he has with Suki and the Serpent's Pass and stuff? Ichiyomo, what do you think about kind of Sokka's coming through, what he comes through at the end of book one and like how it's affected him in book two?
I think the thread of grief feels, I mean, it's central to the entire series. You know, this is a series that begins with information about a genocide and a war and loss. You know, it's just so present in the show. And so I think what Sokka's experiencing, I'm sort of in awe, I guess, to see it, you know, reflected in a series like this, particularly the way in which he's sort of like processing his grief. And, you know, obviously we see this, you know, most prominently in the Serpent's Pass. And, you know, you talked about it in that episode, because I just listened to it in that recap episode where, you know, before, like, Sokka and Suki are about to kiss, but, like, the moon's right in the background, and, you know, you feel the sort of presence of UA.
Like your ex just hanging around every night.
I think between that and also, when I think about sort of like these threads about grief in book two in particular, I'm thinking about the ones that are coming to mind to me are that moment with Sokka and Suki when Aang is unlocking his chakras and is talking about the loss of all the airbenders. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Guru Peti talks about love as energy and sort of love transforming and sort of becoming something else. And the shape sort of turn into Katara.
Yeah. There is such a Yue parallel that is, you know, it's like Aang saw what it looks like when love is sacrificed for the greater good. And, you know, yikes, it's hard.
Yeah. And I say this as somebody who's, you know, experienced loss. Because of that, I also sort of connect it to what happens in the swamp, right? About thinking about grief in particular, because of what happens with Sokka and Yue and what we're seeing with Aang processing with the airbenders, it makes me also think about what happens in the swamp, where time becomes less linear, right? And it's not sort of moving in a straight line, but time is sort of connecting the past and present all together because of what Guru Pratik is saying about love becoming an energy and love sort of transforming into other things. I think a lot in my personal life about the things that grief and loss kind of enables or sort of facilitates, you know, if we're thinking about it as energy, how that energy gets redirected perhaps, or how that energy sort of gets, you know, kind of harnessed into other things, I find really sort of interesting, and definitely like a life lesson that I'm like applying sort of regularly. But, you know, I know a number of folks kind of who have been experiencing grief and loss, and kind of the things that have come out of that, I think is just so fascinating. And so I'm just always really moved to see for Aang, like the clouds kind of shifting and becoming something else, becoming something new, which again is sort of facilitated through the loss of the other airbenders. But it does sort of allow for something else to change, or it makes something else possible, which I think is just sort of a lovely thing to think about.
Absolutely. I love that you brought up the swamp and the guru connected and side by side, because even just thinking about just having had McGizzy on for the guru, like his choices when we reached out to him, because we love him and he's so brilliant and his perspective is always so amazing, as it was with both the first episode that he did in book one, which was Bato, and then of course the guru, he was like, I want to do the swamp or I want to do the guru. And so I think I love hearing you kind of thinking to bring them up side by side as well, because it's like, well, you see exactly why if he loves one he loves the other, and why that totally makes sense. They're so connected, and that's such a great point. I'm so glad you brought that up. And then also, you know, we have sort of at the end, and then we'll move into these social media responses and just give some shout outs to folks who also, you know, had some great feedback, some of which is reflected in kind of what we've talked about. But is this idea of like power and where our power comes from? And I just want to hear your thoughts, Ijeoma, on like the library, for example, and this idea of how you use knowledge you have and how you decide when you're right. Do you know what I mean? Like, Wan Chitong really sticks with me because I'm really troubled by the fact that he says this thing keeps happening when humans get knowledge, and it's that they use it against each other. And it's complicated that that is exactly what has to happen.
It's kind of disheartening when he says
it. It's hard, right?
And then we do exactly what he says.
Yeah. It's bad because he's kind of right.
Then he's going to eat you. I'm going to tell you this, and then I'm going to eat you guys, all of you.
I know. Knowledge and power. What I find interesting about that, I'm going to say something that maybe feels a bit like a sidestep perhaps, but
no, I'm into it. We love sidesteps.
I think the interesting like pairing, or the like the tension or dichotomy between like knowledge and power, or sort of what happens when one is sort of feeding the other, I don't know if I agree with that paradigm. Like, I think that there is a tension that's maybe like, I don't know, sort of like manufactured by like society, or sort of our power structures or things like that. Like, I think about Wang Chitong, you know, knows lots of things and has some points, but like, I don't think he's 100% right.
You're right. He's coming from his place.
Or he doesn't
and
have
being
a lot
jaded.
Of power. He has all the knowledge, and he doesn't have a lot of power to even affect what we're going to do.
Right. Which is maybe why he thinks that when people get knowledge, that they're using it for other types of things. And so I think that the idea, you know, what Wang Chitong is saying, I think it's a narrow view of knowledge. I think it's a narrow view of education.
That.
There, I said it.
I love that. No, because it brings back the idea of balance. Of course, there's going to be a light and a dark to knowledge, to the fluidity of power, to all of that stuff. It's like those are going to be in tension with each other. They're going to be in conflict with each other, but you cannot make an absolute out of that, because it's just not that simple, and it's not fair, and it's in
you
some
can
cases
acknowledge
just
there's
not
a lot
true.
Of people out there with a lot of power that don't have a lot of knowledge on a lot of
thank
things.
You
exactly
thank you my friend.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of examples, in at least in our world, of people who, you know, get knowledge and they use it for good, or they use it to help rebalance power, as you were saying, Janet.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. That was great. I'm so glad we talked about it.
Can I talk once about, for the audience, I felt a big turning point in Bossing Se.
Yeah.
Because I think we built up Bossing Se, this whole magic place and this great place, and even both sides. I mean, Iroh's talking about it in a certain way. The whole gang is like trying to get there in a certain way, and Toph's talking about it. But then when we get there, it's like we turn like a swift left. Like, what is going
it
on?
It sucks.
It's not what we. It's beautiful. I mean, it's beautiful. We got to the big city, and we're like, this is great. But then immediately you meet Long Fang and the Dali and
poor Judy.
Judy's in trouble.
Right, yeah.
Appa's there somewhere. Yeah. It's like Judy's, all of a sudden we're like, oh, and like the whole thing is like, at least in this book, you know, you're hearing all these other people talk about the Fire Nation in a certain way, and then you get there and you think that they're going to be totally behind the gang and the Avatar fighting the Fire Nation, and you're like, oh, this is not the case at all. Like, they're talking, there's no war even going on, and you're like, whoa, what's happening?
Yes.
Which is, I think, a big turning point for the audience with the gang to go like, oh,
the world doesn't always work out the way you think it's going to work out. And now we have a whole other barrel of worms that we have to kind of sift through for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to Ba Sing Se, you can't even get to the king. And then you get to him and you're like,
and nobody even believes you. Everyone looks like you, like you're crazy.
Like, what are you talking about? Didn't expect to have to convince you of this. This is crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm definitely of the mindset that Ba Sing Se definitely sucks. yeah, just 100%. Don't think I want to visit.
Jin's there. Jama Jin's
there. Yeah, she's there. The Jasmine Dragon is there.
Jasmine Dragon.
Good. Gotta love that Jasmine
Dragon.
Good
tea spots there. Very good tea spots. That's right.
Yeah, but I mean, I think way to like learn about managing expectations, right? About like Ba Sing Se, like, you know, sort of like hyping it up as this place. And it's so interesting to just like think about like just everything that's happening like in the Earth Palace. I have like a lot of questions. Some of it I think is sort of like a testament to some of like just the world building that's like different, like each of these nations have their different cultures, and we sort of get that in the Earth Kingdom. It's interesting to me that, you know, the leader of the Earth Kingdom is somebody who doesn't leave his palace and is somebody who maybe doesn't bend his element, and that feels...
And doesn't have a lot of knowledge of what's going on.
And doesn't have a lot of knowledge about what's going on in the world, which I think is really interesting. And that's just, it's different from a lot of the other places that we've seen. And, you know, I think, you know, in some ways it's sort of a testament to like, okay, well maybe, you know, there's an interesting kind of like culture shift or something that's like happening there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I, in my, you know, just sort of abject disregard for Ba Sing Se, I appreciate, you know, that our heroes in the show are, you know, out there like trying to figure out how to like make it work for them in different ways, you know, trying to figure out like, okay, well maybe we can sneak in this way. Like maybe we're going to do like, maybe like, you know, we try this angle. You know, I appreciate that a lot. Cause I don't...
You'd be like, I am going to leave.
Yeah, I'm like, I think you beat me. I'm done. You know, Ba Sing Se is a tough place.
Agreed. Okay, so let's get into some social media responses. Some of them just wanted to shout out. We may not read your exact response because many of you had similar responses. They were all so thoughtfully written and so wonderful. I'm just going to start by recapping. On Twitter, Cody Middleton 98 says, Zuko freeing Appa and Lake Lao guy. Iroh's speech during that scene, the effect that the choice has on Zuko. We've been talking about it through this episode, really feeling like that's a very strong turning point, just like you guys were saying. And then on Instagram, Alec and Lucan and Zazamataz and Zach Van, wonderful conversation that got started within the response area of just like everybody kind of weighing in and talking about that whole beginning of that transformation, that metamorphosis, and what's painful for Zuko. So Dante, I want you to know you're very well represented there. But if you don't mind sharing the one that from Twitter...
Yes. From at Simpatico Chick and Sinfiltro on Instagram agrees, definitely Jet. The Lake Lao guy episode is beautifully written. Jet's entire story arc was about his struggle with justice and the meaning of what justice is or what it looks like. For him to focus on the Fire Nation as an enemy and not realize his own kingdom betrayed him in the end is heartbreaking.
Jet, were you happy to see that
Shout
somebody
out to
was
my boy,
showing
Jet.
Up for Jet? Yeah.
Rest in peace, Jet. Rest in peace. Also, at @htty_drg_ on Twitter says, how could I not pick Toph metal bending? This was such a monumental episode with Aang and Guru and Sokka reuniting with his dad, but Toph literally doing the impossible is just chef's kiss.
It is world changing what she does.
It is world changing.
Yeah, Kat and DeFaust Writes and Marvin808 on Instagram were all talking about that as well. Oh, this goes to what we were talking about before with Sokka, Ijeoma. Sarah Kylie says, it's a smaller one, but I love Sokka and the Serpent's Pass episode. He's still coming to terms with Yue's death and blaming himself for things he thinks he could have done, but Suki inadvertently helping him realize that he's not solely responsible for everyone else's safety, something that was probably ingrained in him since he was left to look after his tribe when the men left for war, is really important to his story. I mean, what a great response. I'm sorry, just being on Instagram, scooting through some cute pics, and then like laying some wisdom down like that. Not bad, Sarah Kylie. Not bad. Put it into the syllabus.
It's a brilliant insight. Sokka learning that in the Serpent's Pass is just something that, you know, like a lot of adults haven't necessarily grappled with, like about the idea of, you know, you're not responsible for other people. That's like a thing that some people take a lifetime to learn. So yeah, I mean,
absolutely.
Shout out to Sokka.
Shout out to Suki.
Shout out to Suki. Dante, read.
Sometimes the white girl teach you the right thing, Sokka.
Yeah. She's what's up. Yeah.
You know?
Read the other one, the one that Sinful True said about Toph, because I love this one.
Okay, on Instagram, Sinful True says, Toph, but not for the reason people have mentioned. She was genuinely devastated that she couldn't defend Appa outside the library, and it's the first time she openly demonstrates feeling helpless rather than this boulder of a person. Pun intended.
Right.
But yes, because she's so strong, and you can really see everyone comes down on her so hard, and she actually comes down on herself very hard also that... She had to let the sandbenders take Appa because she was spending all of her... And she even tried to, like,
do something. She did try, yeah.
She did try. But she had to, you know, we make choices in life and things happened. And
yeah.
You can have guilt and remorse over them. Even though it's not her fault, you know?
It's not her fault. She was literally holding up a building. And yeah, she just didn't know how to sandbend, which also, foreshadow report, I do appreciate that, like, in book three, she's like, oh, I've been working on my sandbending. And she's, like, really, really good at it.
Yeah, you know, she was haunted by that experience.
Exactly.
She was like, I do not want to feel that way.
Never again will I be on some sand and can't do my thing.
Yes. Yep. Yes. I want to give a quick honorable mention shout out. I loved this response from Ray Marie J and VW Barrios on Instagram said, long shot speaking out loud, which is like, oh right. No, it's true. We never heard Longshot. We only heard him say one thing after Jet was either getting close to being gone or maybe being gone. Like it prompted him to say something. So it was a short but sweet answer, not unlike the short and sweet moment we heard Longshot say something. So props for that.
Someone has to take over those freedom fighters, so we don't know. Maybe Longshot's out there in Ba Sing Se.
That's right. Have
found his voice after he lost his leader and has to step up his game, Longshot. You know?
I'd watch that series.
That's right. No kidding.
And so on Instagram, CJFlan74, he says in book 2, episode 12, Aang, when he finally lets go of his rage after witnessing the birth of baby Hope. I've been going through a really hard time lately, but you made me feel hopeful again, which was a very touching moment.
It's a wonderful, I would never have thought of that as being something that really jumped out for someone. And then as soon as I read it, I got tears in my eyes and I was like, oh, of course, like, thank you for reminding me of that, CJ
Flan. It's these things, you know, we get so caught up in our own navel in our lives and pondering our own existence and our failures. And then you actually see there are some magical things that happen in the world still. And when you see one of those magical things that happen where it'd be birth or death or various things that happen, it really puts things in perspective. Like, oh, hold up, okay, let me take a few steps back and stop, you know,
absolutely
being so critical of myself at the moment. Let me witness something actually magical here. And so it was a really beautiful moment.
Love it.
I mean, there's just like you're saying, there's just these so many like small moments that, you know, some other people might kind of look over, but other folks are like, no, like this actually, like this was it, which, you know, is a one thing that I always geek out about because it's what happens when you have like good art that you can look at, like different things speak to different people. And it's always really exciting to like be able to participate in that with other people.
Ugh. Well, we're so glad that you came on to do this with us.
Thank you so much.
Let us geek out together on big picture stuff.
Always a great conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah. Will you tell people where they can find you? Anything else you want to mention? We want to make sure you feel like you got to say everything you might wanted to say.
Yeah, on Twitter you can find me at another Ijoma, and my website is ijomaandraka.com.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ijoma.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening to Avatar Braving the Elements. And hey, make sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a review. All of that really helps the podcast so much, and we love you guys. Next week, we are closing out season 2 with our final recap of The Crossroads of Destiny with none other than Mike DiMartino and Aang himself, Zach Tyler Eisen. You can follow me on social media at The JV Club on Instagram and at Janet Varney on Twitter.
And I'm at Dante Bosco on both of those.
We'll see you next Tuesday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.